When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. Visit medmutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO, POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.
Stop that.
Identify yourself.
I am IG-11. I am this child's nurse droid and require that you remind him to me immediately.
A nurse droid? I thought it was a hunter. Aren't IGs usually hunters? Now, evidently this one's a nurse. I'm sorry, nurse, but you're gonna have to get out of here.
Are you refusing my request?
No. I'm telling you to get out of here.
That was unpleasant. I'm sorry you had to see that.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Richard.
And I'm Chris.
This is House Podcastica. This week we're covering The Mandalorian Season 1, Episode 8, Chapter 8, Redemption.
Yay!
The right. Finale!
The last one. God, it's come so fast.
Yeah, that was a fast 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Or 7 weeks, I guess.
Quick series. I mean, I remember every series, it seemed like if they weren't 22 episodes, they felt like they were slacking.
I mean, back when we were all kids, TV shows were all 20, 22, 24 episodes, and it felt normal, and now almost nothing ever is.
But it's nice right. Because I think the quality goes up when they do shorter runs.
I agree with that, yeah.
In general. Your anticipation, too.
When you guys are hearing this, probably, if you heard it, the day it came out, it's Richard's birthday, so happy birthday, Rich.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, I didn't know that. Happy birthday, man.
Yeah.
Tomorrow for us.
I'm feeling it. I'm old.
It's okay. We all get old.
Yeah.
And you look great, by the way.
Ah, thanks.
So, Star Wars question of the week. Which character or role in Star Wars would you most want to be?
Rich, let's hear it first.
Well, according to brainfall.com, I took the test and I am Han Solo.
Oh, nice.
But I think I fancy myself more like Obi-Wan Kenobi. I think I would rather be him. He had a great life, and he lived to be an old man.
That's saying something on this show, in this universe.
That's right, yeah. I didn't know there was a test. I would have taken a test if I'd known there was one.
Yeah, there's a couple of websites. Quizzes. You just answer a few questions, yeah.
I took a Star Wars job quiz, and it said I'm a rebel.
Okay. Were there only two options, Rebel or Imperial?
I don't know. I didn't tell you the options, but there were a ton of questions, so
okay.
I assume there's other jobs in there.
Well, I decided to go not with a specific character, but more with a role. And like you said, Jason, everything seems so dangerous in Star Wars. There's not a lot of people who survive all that long. I mean, of the ones we know about. So I decided to go with plain old moisture farmer. And I figure it's a nice, quiet life. You know, you're out of the spotlight, unless you get thrust into the spotlight. But for the most part, you sort of stay out and you go about your day to day. You occasionally go into Tashi Station for some power converters and everything's great. So keep it simple.
That's and you awesome. Get water.
And you get water in the desert, right.
And you guys, you'll be in the same area, so you can hang out.
Totally. I look forward to that.
I got to find some Tatooine person. I mean, just thinking about this, I was like, okay, let me see here. All the characters, well, geez, most of them are dead, and they're all, like, always in war. It's Star Wars, and war is not fun. I suddenly started thinking about it so differently. Like, geez, there's a lot of tragedy and misery, and whole planets get blown up, and even the librarian got killed.
Yeah, it's not a safe galaxy.
Yeah.
No, it's not. So go with Jawa. Then you can hang out with us on
Saturday. Yeah. But I was thinking that just a second ago, but I'm totally not like a mechanic or anything. I don't like taking things apart or putting them back together. I was, even like the leaders get overthrown, and it's just like, God, if there's a place in Star Wars that's like where people just get to kind of kick back and relax and have a good time, we really don't see much of that. So I was just thinking right now I would probably most want to be Baby Yoda, and I'd have a cool dad who took care of me, and I'd just kind of feel like I had no real responsibility, and then every once in a while I'd save the day with my force powers.
Nice.
Right.
You'd be 50
Everyone loves
years
you.
Old.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty close to my real age. Okay, let's get into our top three highlights for this week's episode. It's top three highlights for Mandalorian Chapter 8 Redemption. What did you guys think in general?
Well, I thought it was a really great episode, a great closer to the season. It had good action, it had good tension, and it felt like we got a lot of answers, but also left us with just as many questions. So I really liked it.
Yeah, totally agree. I struggle to express how well balanced I feel that this show is, you know? Like for example, my wife and I are watching The Witcher, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, this is kind of boring. And then I'm like, no, Rich, just give it a few episodes. Come on, don't be like that. But then I watch this show, and I'm like, nah, it's boring. The show kicks butt.
Yeah, I know. We had an episode of His Dark Materials we've been watching, and the season finale we hadn't watched yet, and Mandalorian, and I told Jenny, well, I got both of those, and she's like, Mandalorian.
Yeah.
That's the one you want to watch. And everything you said, Chris, I agree, and you too, Rich, it's just so balanced with all this stuff, and one thing you didn't mention is it was also funny, so I like that too.
Yeah, that's true. It had a few good comedic moments in there. So just a great finish to the season, and
right on. Okay, let's go with Rich. Number three,
I'm gonna go with Moff Gideon. That dude's badass. He was an officer during the Imperial siege on Mandalore, so in this episode he had like no fear. He acted almost like a Sith, kind of. He executed psychological warfare with his densely packed character summation, you know, which kind of gave us all that information about the first season.
And just the fact that he knew so much about them was like, ooh. He was even revealing things about them that they didn't know about each other.
Exactly. He was scaring me. And in the end, he had the Darksaber, which was totally cool, which, you know, raises a whole bunch of questions in itself. And then that was funny after his psychological warfare, he pulls the classic, I will give you until sundown, and then walks away, just like they do in the classic spaghetti westerns.
Yeah, I thought he was really awesome in this episode. I thought the giving them until sundown thing was a little dumb, because like, if he really wants to kill them, why not just attack them? It kind of just gave them a
Nico
way
was like, what?
Yeah, it's like, just start fighting. But everything else you said, absolutely right. He just walked around that battlefield with no fear and just shooting, you know, Mando every chance he got. And it was great. And then I just realized that as you were saying it, but you're right. He knew so much about them. And that's such a like power move for him, right? Like knowledge is power. And he knows more about them than they know about him or they know about each other. And it just showed his place, like just on a higher level above these characters. He was so good.
I was thinking at first, oh, is it realistic that he would get in the middle of the battle like that? But then when he came out with the Darksaber at the end, I'm like, oh, he's a special kind of guy. He's super formidable. And because you'd think the other Moffs, they would like to be up, you know, on a starship far away directing the action or something. But he's different.
Right. Yeah. And he's flying the TIE fighter, too. So he's a pilot on top of all that.
Yeah, I mean, that might be a sign of the times a little bit, right? That he's down there right in the middle of it because he doesn't have as huge a force to command from a spaceship.
I think it's about his character, too, though.
Yeah,
we'll see.
For sure.
But,
for sure.
I mean, I'm glad because, you know, we've had all these characters who don't last long or who are in it for just an episode or two. And it seems like Gus Fring, Giancarlo Esposito is going to stick around and be an arch enemy kind of a guy, which I love because I think he's great. And this is not a complaint, but it did feel to me like this is the Star Wars Gus Fring.
I could see that a little bit.
And I'm okay with that. I mean, it's a little different, but there's definitely a similar feel where you just feel an ominousness to him just by his presence and the way his eyes kind of droop when he talks that show he's got this, I don't know, disdain and darkness inside of him. Giancarlo Esposito does that really well.
Yeah, that was the other thing too. He's going to be in season two, which was cool, and you can't have a great hero unless you have a great villain. So
right.
Looking forward to that.
Good point.
He is indeed a great villain. Should we talk about this Darksaber a little bit more right now? Because I must admit, I didn't know what it was when I saw it at first. This is not something I'd seen before.
I didn't know what a history it had. Did you put it all down, Jay?
Yeah. I had seen it in an episode, because I've watched episodes of Rebels and Clone Wars here and there, but I totally didn't remember the history, and so I had to go back and look it up. Yeah, so this is a unique saber in the Star Wars universe. It's one of a kind. It was in, like I said, Clone Wars and Rebels, and it changed owners. But it was created originally over 1,000 years ago by Ter Vizsla, the first and I think only Mandalorian to ever be a Jedi. So he was inducted into the Jedi Order. And after his death, members of the House Vizsla stole it and used it to unify the people and rule all of Mandalore wielding that blade. So it became a symbol of power. And since then, whoever wields the blade is viewed by Mandalorian traditionalists as the rightful ruler of Mandalore. And defeating the blade's owner in ritualistic combat is the way to get it for yourself, and then you are seen as having that power. So it's super cool because that makes Moff Gideon like a really personal enemy for the Mandalorian.
Yeah. At one point, I think Darth Maul stole it too.
Yeah, so
of it for a little bit.
So here's from an article in IGN. During the Clone Wars, Tar Vizsla's descendant Pre Vizsla, who was voiced by Jon Favreau on the Clone Wars, used the blade to rally his Death Watch recruits against Mandalore's political leader, Duchess Satine Kryze. Pre Vizsla made the mistake of forging an alliance with ex-Sith Lord Darth Maul, who killed him in ritualistic combat and became the new leader of Death Watch. At some point during the waning days of the Clone Wars, the Darksaber fell into the possession of the Night Sisters of Dathomir. It was then claimed by Sabine Wren, a Mandalorian expatriate and member of the Rebel Alliance. She's one of the main characters of the Rebels cartoon. Sabine used the blade to rally her people against Viceroy Gar Saxon, the Imperial appointed ruler of Mandalore. Sabine then bestowed the Darksaber to Bo-Katan Kryze, sister of the late Duchess Satine. That act seemed to open a brighter future for Mandalore and its people. Unfortunately, the Mandalorian has repeatedly hinted at a dark fate for this planet, with several characters alluding to the Empire's purge of Mandalore and the survivors being forced into hiding. The fact that Moff Gideon now wields the blade suggests he himself may be responsible for killing Bo-Katan and robbing Mandalore of its rightful ruler.
Damn.
Yeah. It's so deep, like so much history to this thing that I basically looked it up and read about the part about how you know, it was the first Mandalorian inducted into the Jedi Order, and I thought that was cool enough, but listening to you go through all that is just endless. It's amazing.
I mean, there's a lot of history with these just because of these cartoons, and it definitely makes me want to go back and watch them again. There's a lot of them, you know, they have their 22 episode seasons, but there's some really good stuff in there. I mean, from what I recall, it's kind of uneven. There's some that seem kind of boring, but there's some really, really good ones. And it's one of those series that gets the Clone Wars that gets better as it goes along. So anyway,
right. Right. Well, it sounds like it might be worth it. I have never seen any of it, so
it's all on Disney Plus. If you're gonna keep it around for a little while,
right? That's a big decision I have to make now. Actually,
I know. Me too.
Yeah.
Okay, Chris, what's yours?
Well, my first item, I'm going to go back to the beginning of the episode and talk about the opening scene, because I think there is so much brilliance going on in this conversation between the two scout troopers when they're sitting around on the speeder bikes. I just loved it. Like, it's rare in Star Wars that you see characters like this have just sort of a normal conversation, right? You never see stormtroopers do this. Mm-hmm. You know, and rarely anybody else, even when they're just sort of having an off moment almost. And I loved it how they kind of lampoon Star Wars a little bit, because their inability to shoot anything that's like right there, not moving. They sort of joke about like all the like leaders' propensity to kill their own men all the time, you know, and all these things that we just accept in Star Wars.
That was my favorite thing, is they're like, oh, he just killed another trooper for interrupting him, so it's going to be a while. And I was like, man, another show, a less creative show, would have just been there with Moff Gideon and shown him doing that. And it would have been so been there, done that, boring. But it was awesome to hear it from this perspective. Okay, all right.
Well, and that's exactly what I mean. Yeah, it's these two guys who are just, they kind of are just doing their job, right? This is what they do. And they're talking about, oh my God, the boss sucks, he killed another guy, right? So I just thought it was an amazing balance of comic relief and, you know, something we don't see in Star Wars all the time. And then, of course, three solid punches to the child, which I'm sure had everybody just outraged.
Dude!
Me included. It's like, how can you punch a baby?
Yeah. I mean, I was pissed. And I knew right away, okay, they're setting up these guys for a grisly ending here. That's why they did that, so that when they get killed in some bad way, we're going to be happy about it. And then it happened just like I thought.
Of course it did. IG-11 shows up and is awesome. So I just love the whole opening scene. Everything there was perfect. Loved it.
Yeah, that was great. My wife was screaming at the TV, stop hitting Baby Yoda.
Yeah. Dude, and then the second guy, you kind of thought, okay, maybe he's going to, because he seemed worried. It hasn't moved in a while. Maybe he's going to be like good cop, bad cop. And then Baby Yoda bit him, and then he hit him even harder. And it's like, fuck you, man.
Come on.
This guy's going to die.
Yep. Now, I thought the thing with trying to shoot whatever that was and totally missing, it was so funny. But I also am like, I don't want Star Wars to be a sitcom. So I think I liked it. But if they parody it too much, they could go overboard with it and turn it into the Christmas special or something.
Yeah, they've made fun of stormtroopers' inability to hit anything a few times, at least twice on the show. So they can probably put that joke to bed now, but it worked for me here.
It did for me too.
Yeah.
Okay, my turn. Let's see. My first one was just about particularly cool moments. That whole scene with those two guys was definitely one of them. I loved it just as much as you did. Even though I was incensed when they were punching the poor little Baby Yoda. A lot of great stuff with IG-11. I know, I think of Bender 2 now, but I still like seeing IG-11 in action and coming in on the speeder bike and then spinning around to protect Baby Yoda. You know, it just reinforces that, oh, this is why these kind of droids are particularly good at this kind of stuff. And I like his, you know, he's gone now, so we can kind of eulogize him a little bit, but I like his delivery, how it's kind of flat and matter of fact. Reminds me a little bit of K2SO from Rogue One, but I was thinking if he would have had a more expressive personality like C-3PO or some of the other droids, then I don't think his whole arc would have worked as well, because it would have been a dramatic change from hunter personality to nurse personality. But the flatness sort of kept us wondering if he'd really changed.
Right. Yeah, you're right about that, actually. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about his delivery that way, but it really worked. I mean, Taika Waititi did the voice. Yeah. And did a great job and also directed the episode.
He was understated. Yeah.
Yes.
He's great. And I am glad that the bomb went off. I thought Chekhov's bomb, you know, we saw it in the season premiere and it went off in the finale and that was cool. And I'm sad. I'm maybe almost as sad about IG-11 dying as Queel, but as I was with Queel. But I like that there are stakes in this and that, you know, now we're afraid for everybody because we've lost two big characters and that's a good place to be with a show like this. So I know Rich never agrees with that kind of stuff, but and then the video game nature of the show expressed itself again in this episode. The Mandalorian leveled up because he got his signet and his jetpack. And I really liked the armor saying, "Have you trained in the art of the Rising Phoenix?" which sounds kind of poetic. And it also makes it clear that he's trained in it before, which I thought was good because it would be a little bit dumb if he just knew how to fly it without ever having done it before. But anyway.
Right. Well, she said it was, you control it with your mind, which was a pretty cool piece of information.
I didn't catch that. That's cool.
Yeah. She said something like, "It won't listen to your thoughts."
Oh, yeah. Right. So he seemed pretty good at it. I mean, he was a little shaky. It was a little Greatest American Hero there, but he was pretty good. But I really liked the part after he disabled Moff Gideon's TIE fighter and he was falling to the ground and it was scary. And then he punched it at the last second there and righted himself. That was super cool.
Right. Without a word. He's just a badass.
And then he grabs Baby Yoda and flies off. And I'm like, man, what a cool dad.
Any dad with a jetpack has got to be a cool dad.
Okay, Rich, number two.
My number two is IG-11. Like you just said, I was happy. I am happy he ended up a hero. Sacrificing himself for the welfare of everybody, especially the child, and making Kareel's work legit. You know, there was a little bit of a iffy there whether or not he was actually reprogrammed to be a nursing droid, and he was. Became his second protocol, I guess, before committing suicide if he got caught. And how, you know, and I really, I agree with Grief when Grief said, "Oh, I love IG units." He had all the tools and everything. It's cool how he can rotate his body to protect Baby Yoda as he's fighting, and his head and his arms can all rotate. I mean, he's quite a weapon. He made that great joke and that great line near the end when, like you said, and he delivered it flat. So, you know, it made it even better when Mando said, "I'm not sad." Yes, you are.
Yeah.
He had a couple of good jokes.
I've analyzed your voice.
Right. Yeah.
And he made the joke about damage to his central processing unit or whatever. You mean my brain?
Yeah. And you know what else, too? There was a lot of, I felt there was a lot of Terminator influence on this episode. You had Mando pick up that big old Gatling gun, just like Arnold did, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then you had IG-11 step into the lava at the end and...
Oh, yeah. And
meet his maker that way. Well,
right.
Part on his way to meet his maker.
Yeah. Well, IG-11 actually I wanted to talk about as well because he was my favorite in this episode, really, I think, because and I finally lost the Bender vibe a little bit with him in this one. I didn't think he looked quite as much like him and he was way less goofy for me. So everything he did with the speeder bike was awesome. The way he jumped off at the end, it all just looked so cool. And overall, I found him so much more useful now that he was reprogrammed because he can still fight, but he can also heal and take care of people. And, you know, just when I'm starting to love the character, he's dead. But that's okay because, you know, his sacrifice was meaningful. It was handled really well. And I think him sacrificing himself made me feel good about some of the other characters even because, as you said, Rich, the Mandalorian was sad even though he hates droids, so that's a big development in his character. And it made me miss Queel even more because he's the one who turned IG-11 into this super awesome, like, nurse droid. So I'm really going to miss the guy, even though I like the way he went out saving everybody.
He got him out of some tight spots.
Yeah, he did. And I hadn't thought about the Terminator thing, but that makes it even better for me. I like that reference.
It's kind of interesting because, you know, we feel sad and we're, it's sort of a heartwarming thing, but it could really just be like as simple as I think it is, that he's this machine that got programmed to help instead of hurt. And it's just a matter of programming. He could just as easily have been programmed to become a torture droid. I don't know why, what I'm getting at exactly, but we translate this into like a humanity about the whole thing when really it's more just like, well, it was more Queel that made that possible than IG-11, who was just sort of a vessel.
What do they call it? You anthropomorphize, anthropomorphize. Yeah. Disney's good at that.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Well, yeah, I see what you're saying, but, you know, Star Wars is good at making you love droids.
And that's
this
true.
This one just took me a little bit longer to get on board with. Right. They finally did it and then ripped them away from me. Guys, how awesome would it have been, though? And we aren't going to, I don't think we're obviously never going to get this, but I was sort of hoping for a Mandalorian IG-11 Cara Dune, you know, team-up mission for season 2 or something. I was hoping they'd stick together, but it seems like we're not sticking together with anybody, really. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure she'll be back on, but he's blown himself to bits.
Yeah, IG-11's not coming back, that's for sure.
Not that unit.
Right. Yeah, maybe there'll be some other one that's... Sometimes they do that, like with another version that you're not sure you can trust or something. I don't know how that would work, but... So my number 2 is Mando and IG-11 coming to terms with their nurturing nature. And I liked how there was a symmetry between the two of them where they both went against their hunter natures to become a nurser. And now, I like that you had to have Mandalorian... learn to trust IG-11. I liked when he was like trying to get a hold of Queel and IG-11 radioed back and he had Baby Yoda and said that Queel was dead and Mando had no choice but to just, well, there's nothing he could do. But that whole experience really changed his perspective on at least this one droid. But then, you know, IG-11 sacrificed himself. And all of this is, I was just thinking, they're in this situation where they're risking their lives and even sacrificing their lives just because Baby Yoda is so cute.
Well, he does now. He does the magic hand thing. That's what he does.
That was awesome. Do the magic hand thing, baby.
Come on, baby. Do the magic hand thing.
Waves.
He just waves back at him. Yeah.
So anyway, the Mandalorian, it's been pretty clear that he cares, but he really owned it this time. You know, him and Baby Yoda are bound together more than ever before because he's got that signet, which is sort of a symbol, I guess, of his purpose, or at least, I don't know exactly how people, I think of it like an Indian name, you know, it has something to do with your origin, I guess.
Yeah, well, it was a symbol of the Mudhorn. This is how, you know, how they saved each other.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah. It was a big old horn on a head.
That was my understanding, too. Oh. It was a mud horn, which I like, but I also think was slightly weird because she tried to give him the mud horn one before, and he said it wasn't an honorable kill, remember?
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I don't get, why is it a mud horn? I thought they said that didn't make sense.
Well, I think it's because... of the change in his role with Baby Yoda now. Yeah.
Because he said he didn't want the Mudhorn because he was something about an enemy. So this signifies how he's changed his perspective on Baby Yoda.
Mm. Yeah. So it becomes okay to have the Mudhorn as the signet. And I thought it was really cool looking no matter what.
And this is the way.
And this is the way.
I like how this is the way can be similar to I Have Spoken.
Yeah, where, or It's Settled Then.
Yeah, yeah, where like Cara Dune's like, I'm not going to leave you. And he's like, this is the way. It's like, okay, what else are you going to say?
Yeah. It's everybody has their mic drop saying, right? It's like, right. I'm about to die. I don't, you know, she doesn't want to leave. This is the way. And she has to go.
Money don't crack.
Right.
Try that.
If your kids don't want to go to bed, this is the way.
So now we have a premise for season two, at least, where Mando is tasked with reuniting Baby Yoda with his own kind. And one thing about this series, it's really put the child at the heart of it. And so I feel like that's great because it's so fun to watch so far, but I don't know if I want it to be trapped in that storyline forever. Can it evolve beyond that, or does it even need to? Maybe it doesn't need to. I don't know. But anyway, what do you guys think of the new direction where Mando is tasked with finding this like secret species of Yoda?
At first I was kind of like, well, here we're going to go back to the beginning of kind of the first season. It's like, okay, he's going to be jumping from planet to planet looking for, you know, the family of the child, and, you know, it's probably going to get into scrapes and scraps here with, you know, new adventures every week, but I'm cool with that. I think that'll be cool if that's the direction we're going, but then you're going to have Moff Gideon after him the whole time too, and that he's quite the bad guy, so
yeah,
I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I basically agree with that. I was a little skeptical at first, and the Mandalorian actually summed it up for me with the line he said to the armorer. He said, "You expect me to search the galaxy for the home of this creature and deliver it to a race of enemy sorcerers?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, good point. Is that all it's going to be? And she said, this is the way. But I do think it sets up season two to be kind of similar to season one, although now we have this really defined goal, which I think we were missing a little bit of in season one. Especially during the middle there, we weren't really sure where it was going or what path the show was going to follow. So I feel like it's going to be similar, but better. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to it because I think they can go off on some fun adventures here and there. And if we can keep Cara Dune in somehow, because I love that character, I think that'll be great. And Rich, as you said, Moff Gideon will be always right behind them, and lots to look forward to.
Yeah, and what happens when they find where he belongs?
Right.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. That's
what they do.
One reason why I like it, because, you know, the Star Wars universe has been explored in such great depth, and yet that's one of the great mysteries still left, is what's up with Yoda's species. So it would be really fun if this series would get into that, and I hope they do. I'm curious about it. And
I'm pretty sure they will, and I think that's great.
And especially because, yeah, it's like enemy sorcerers, you know, they've been enemies with the Mandalorians. But also, I just have such confidence in the crew behind this show to make any premise work. And I've really come to like the sort of story of the week format, even though I thought I was over that. But with this show, I think it's been really fun. I mean, they've had a pretty good balance of still having an overarching plot, but it's way more weighted towards one and done stories than most shows that I like these days.
Yeah. Plus all the callbacks.
Yeah. It's all really fun.
Those are cool.
All right. Number one.
Number one was, for me, was the speeder bike troopers talking. Chris brought up. That was great. You know, one of the speeder bike stormtroopers was Jason Sudeikis.
Yeah.
From Saturday Night Live. Yeah. And it kind of played off like a Saturday Night Live skit making fun of Star Wars.
It did.
But,
huh?
But they don't, you know, the whole thing explains a lot. I mean, it's like, you know, stormtroopers probably aren't the brightest bulb in the pack, you know. It was like listening to a conversation between two eighth graders. They said a lot, but said nothing. Mm-hmm. And then their target practice fail. And he shakes the gun like there's something wrong with the gun. Yeah.
And there's a little like power play between them as you get in any level of any job. Like, I want to see what's in the bag. Hey, no, man.
Yeah. And they're violent and dumb. And, you know, I thought it was great. It explained a lot.
It's fun that Jason Sudeikis was in there. I knew that as well. And if you had a chance to cameo as a stormtrooper and like no one was ever going to know, wouldn't you do it? I think that would be
would be
great, right? And other people have, like other big name actors have done this too, because didn't Daniel Craig appear in episode 8, I think, as a stormtrooper? Awakens,
yeah.
That was a rumor, yeah.
Or one of them, yeah.
For real.
No, he was actually in there. I think you're right, Jason. I think it was Force Awakens.
It was the one where Rey first learned that she could
right
direct people's minds with the Force.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, of all people, like, friggin' James Bond wants to put on a mask and be a stormtrooper, you know? Like, that's how exciting it is for, you know, even big famous actors to do. So I understand that.
Okay, Chris, number one.
Well, I mean, my number one was sort of moving ahead from here and how we have a storyline for season two, it seems like, anyways. So we've really already kind of talked about that. But I did, you know, I did like how the armorer called him a clan of two, and he has to at some point either keep the child in his protection until he finds the child's people, or until the child has become of age. And I thought that was interesting. So if he can't figure out where the child is from, it's going to be a while, I think, for the Mandalorian to have Baby Yoda in tow.
Yeah.
And then I also thought, what was the other thing? Oh, I think they implied that, you know, the child is now a foundling. So in theory, I think the Mandalorian could train the child to be a Mandalorian, and I thought that was a weird, crazy idea too, right? So we could have a Force-using Yoda species Mandalorian armor wearing whatever, and I think that would be awesome.
That would be a bobblehead.
Oh yeah, that for sure. They'd have to figure out some way to get those ears inside the helmet, yeah, but
or make some little holes on the sides.
Oh my god, that would be super hilarious. So I don't know, I think there's all kinds of options there, but anyways, yeah, it was just sort of where we're going from here, and we've mostly all talked about it. But guys, the thing we didn't really talk about is the helmet removal. We had the helmet come off.
Yeah.
And I got to admit, I think that was a pretty clever way to do it by having a non-living droid be the one that has to take it off, so that, you know, Mando still hasn't taken his helmet off in front of another living person.
Not counting us. Exactly. 20 million viewers.
Not counting us. That we don't count. Though, we don't count. You know, we don't
for the
count.
Show. Yeah, you're right. For the show, there's been no violation, right? It was just exclusively for the audience to see his face. I don't know how I feel about that, though. Did we need to see it? I mean, would you feel any different if he didn't see his face?
You know, that's a good question. I don't think I would, actually. I kind of appreciated the scene for what it was, but you're right. We didn't really need to. I never felt a strong need to see his real face at any point during the show.
Well, point taken right here. I didn't even really think about mentioning it.
That's funny, actually.
I mean, by hiding it and holding off all this time, it gave it a different feel than if they would have just shown it the whole time, for sure. And we got used to seeing him with just his helmet and developed our feelings about the character based on that appearance. And it reminded me of the show Dating in the Dark. Have you guys ever seen that?
No.
It's one of those dumb reality shows where there's these three women on one side of a house and three men staying on the other side, and they can't see each other. And there's a room in the middle that's pitch black, and they take turns having little, like, 30-minute dates or something where they just can't see each other at all. And then they decide who they want to see at the end based on their interactions. And half the time when the light would come on and you, like, the girl would see the guy's face, she'd be like, oh no. And it wasn't always because they weren't good looking. It was just because you kind of get an idea of what you think someone's like, and then all of a sudden they seem like a stranger when they're actually revealed, you know? Mm-hmm. And we know Pedro Pascal. Most of us already know him. I mean, I know him from Game of Thrones, but he looked different here. He didn't look so good. And so I had a weird feeling, like, I'm emphasizing it too much. It's fine, whatever. I mean, I'm okay with it. I think it's fine, but it was a little weird for me.
Were they allowed to touch each other in that dark room?
Yeah. Sometimes the guys got a little grabby too, and the girls didn't like that.
Well, yeah, that's how you decide.
Like, the cover of darkness is not an excuse for assaulting someone.
Right. Especially when you've got infrared TV cameras.
Also that, yeah.
Yeah, you are on camera. Oh,
not that it's okay if no one's seeing.
Yeah, we should be clear about that, yeah, too. That just proved to me they'll make a show about anything. Good God.
I found it fascinating, but I'm a sucker for, like, those shows I kind of like just because I feel like they're showing the psychology of people, you know, putting them in this high pressure situation and see how they'll react. But anyway,
sounds like a giant experiment
topic. Yeah. So do you guys think that at some point he will, during this series, he will change his ideals and show his face to people?
I do not. No, I think he's going to stick with it. I don't think he's going to show his face to people unless it's like the last thing that happens when the show is ending forever. But I don't think it's going to happen before then.
I mean, even in this case, he thought he was about to die and he still didn't want to do it.
Yeah, right. Even to the droid. Like, he puts a gun to the droid and says, don't let me
die.
That
was funny, but, too.
Yeah.
And we learned his name.
Oh, yeah, yes. Din, how do you pronounce
Din
it?
Din Djarin.
Din Djarin.
Yeah, it's spelled funny. The last name is, I think, Djarin or something like that. If you had been paying attention to the internet,
you would
right
have been
after,
spoiled on that.
Yeah, right after episode one, Pedro Pascal let that slip. Or who knows? Like, I don't know if he was actually restricted from letting that information out, but he did in any case. So that was out there. But I don't think I knew it, but I don't know if you guys did.
I did, but I didn't want to say it on the podcast because why spoil it?
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. Thought it was a cool name.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe that's why they showed his face, because you gave him a name now, show his face, build a little more, you know, empathy for the guy, I guess.
I mean, I think his character was the most vulnerable we've seen him in this episode. He was close to death, bleeding, sad, and he showed his face and we learned his name. You know, it's just a huge difference from the normally calm, cool, collected Clint Eastwood type character.
Yeah, that's true. And then IG-11 took the hero role.
Yeah.
How good is that Bacta spray, though, eh? You just spray a little on his head, and he's good to go in a couple of hours.
I know.
Man, I got to get me some of that.
Seriously.
All right, where are we? My turn?
Sure.
Okay. Lore and callbacks. So Moff Gideon gave out a lot of information. He said, members of my escort have completed assembly of an E-Web heavy repeating blaster. That gun is used against the rebels on Hoth and Empire Strikes Back, so we've seen it before. He goes on, if you're unfamiliar with this weapon, I'm sure that Republican shock trooper Cara Cynthia Dune of Alderaan will advise you that she has witnessed many of her ranks vaporized mid-descent facing the predecessor of this particular model. So that tells us her name is Cara Cynthia, and also that she's from Alderaan, which is the same planet as Princess Leia is from, where she was the princess of, and her father Bail Organa, and the one that Grand Moff Tarkin had the Death Star destroy in Star Wars. So now it makes even more sense why Kara hates Imperials.
Right. Yeah. Homeless and pissed off.
what a cool name, Cara Cynthia.
Yeah.
I thought that was awesome. I mean, I'm not having any more kids, but if I had another one coming along and it was a girl, that'd be a serious consideration.
Then he says, or perhaps the decommissioned Mandalorian hunter Din Djarin has heard the songs of the Siege of Mandalore when gunships outfitted with similar ordnance laid waste to fields of Mandalorian recruits in the Night of a Thousand Tears. So the Siege of Mandalore was one of the last battles in the Clone War where Imperial forces seized control of Mandalore, and that's when, what's the guy's name who got cut in half? Darth Maul.
Darth Maul.
Yeah, he was in charge, and the Jedi were there fighting them. But then Order 66 happened. We know Order 66. That's when all the clone troopers turned against the Jedi because the Emperor enacted Order 66, and that happened right in the middle of this siege. And so then the Jedi died, and basically Mandalore ended up being subjugated under control of the Empire during this. And that's been mentioned apparently, but never really seen. But we should apparently see this in the upcoming season 7 of the Clone Wars animated series. It's coming out, I think, in February or something.
Mm.
Siege of Mandalore. Cool. Mando says Gideon was an ISB officer during the Purge. That's the Imperial Security Bureau, and they're like a secret police intelligence agency. Tamp down disloyalty and stuff like that.
Uh-huh. So that's so another much. Star Wars thing I'd never heard of, actually.
Me neither.
I think sounds really cool, and they could do a whole show about the ISB.
Right. Let's see. Kara mentions a mind flayer. Don't open that door or we'll be dead. They'll let me to a mind flayer. That's a Dungeons & Dragons monster that preys on your mind or something.
It's that weird. They had something like that in Star Trek, too, where they could put thoughts into your head or extract thoughts.
Yeah. So there, I didn't find any other reference to that in Star Wars. One source thought it could be a reference to, what's the name? Something Gullet, this alien that was used to interrogate Bodhi Rook in Rogue One, that tentacly thing.
Oh, wow, man.
Read his mind, I don't know. But it might drive you insane while it's doing it. The Flame Trooper, those things have appeared in the Star Wars Battlefront video game and on the Clone Wars animated series, but this was the first live-action appearance of that.
Yeah, that was cool. Mm-hmm. I saw that helmet on a comic book, so that was cool to see that on the screen.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. And I liked that, you know, Baby Yoda, he needed to use the Force to push back those flames, which then exhausted him, and so he wasn't able to heal Mando, so that made the situation more dire.
Right, yeah, that was cool. I thought that was a good move.
Yeah. It's been unclear or a little confused about whether you could be a Mandalorian if you weren't born on Mandalore, but now it's been made clear that, at least with Mando's tribe, it's about following their creed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Greef Karga was confused about that too, so.
Kara said it straight up, right? It's a creed, not a race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Bacta that you mentioned, that's IGN sprays Mando with a Bacta infusion. Bacta is this healing compound that can help the body regrow tissue. And, of course, we saw Luke floating in a Bacta tank at the end of Empire Strikes Back after he was injured from fighting Darth Vader in Cloud City. And we also saw Vader submerged in a Bacta tank on Mustafar in Rogue One. So that stuff is pretty useful. What else? The armor says the songs of eons past tell of battles between Mandalore the Great and an order of sorcerers called Jedi that fought with such powers. From what I could see, Mandalore the Great has not been mentioned before this, but it has been known that there's been a series of battles between the Jedi and the Mandalorians, and that's why the Jedi develop their weaponry as an anti-Jedi kind of a thing.
How about that scene where the lady armorer kicked ass with her tools? That was cool.
Yeah.
You're like, why is she still alive? It's like, oh, okay. She can take care of herself. Yeah.
I'm really glad they included that, because as they were leaving, I was thinking to myself, you know, she's out there all by herself. How is she going to defend herself?
Apparently
pointless. Pretty well.
Yeah, like I was like, why stay there? You're just staying there to die. And then I'm like, oh,
she's got it covered.
She's perfectly fine. Yeah, and that, hopefully we'll see her again in season 2.
But one thing I'm like, man, that big pile of Mandalorian helmets, if Beskar steel is so valuable, you'd think that would have been taken, unless for some reason those aren't made of Beskar steel, so I don't know.
Yeah, when I saw that big pile of armor, I thought my first thought was, "Oh crap, Mandalorian's going to get more armor. He's going to look like Iron Man. This is going to be cool."
So, a little bit of a different kind of lore, that R2 looking droid with arms rowing the boat down the lava river reminded me of the River Styx.
Yeah.
It's a mythological boundary between Earth and the underworld, and there's a ferryman that has a pole like that
and doesn't speak.
Right. Charon, and it evokes death, so I think that was on purpose, like,
right.
What a weird looking like R2 unit, though. My first reaction was to kind of reject it and go, wait,
me too.
No,
I R2 still
units
do.
Don't have arms and legs.
I don't like it.
No, but then Kara shot its head off for like almost no reason, and that's fine. I felt okay about it
too.
Yeah. He has anger issues.
I just felt like that was an attempt to show us something new, and I would rather just see another type of droid.
Yeah, I hear you.
I don't know.
I don't think they really needed to go for such a familiar droid, right?
Yeah, it's just weird. Yeah. The chest bomb of IG-11 kind of reminded me of the thermal detonator that Leia brought to Jabba's palace. I don't know if they're actually similar, but that's what I thought of.
I figured it was basically the same thing.
Maybe,
sort of a Star Wars grenade or high-powered grenade.
Yeah. The last thing I have is, so the 1,000 years ago Mandalorian that created the Darksaber is called Ter Vizsla. And in Clone Wars, his descendant, Pre Vizsla, was voiced by Jon Favreau. And Paz Vizsla is the Mandalorian that Jon Favreau voiced in this series, the one that challenged Mandalorian earlier, but then fought to help him and then flew up next to him at the end of that one episode.
Oh, the big guy.
Yeah, the big guy. So maybe that he's the son of Favreau's character, Pre Vizsla, from Clone Wars.
All right.
That's cool. I don't know. But I get the feeling, I didn't even realize Jon Favreau was a voice in Clone Wars before watching the series, but I think he learned a lot and he's using it, you know.
Yeah, really cool. He's quite the Star Wars fan, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, that's who you want in charge, I think.
Totally.
Yeah.
You know?
And he knows to have Dave Filoni there with him, who's like an encyclopedia, a Star Wars encyclopedia.
Yeah, that helps too.
Okay. Any notes?
Oh, gosh. You covered all of mine.
I only have one that we haven't touched on, and that's that we got to see Mando's, I guess, origin, I guess you call it, uninterrupted in a flashback this episode. And I enjoyed it, but I don't feel like we got too much new information other than he was, as a child, immediately rescued by the Mandalorians when his parents put him in that little basement there. But So I don't think it was all that groundbreaking or revelatory about anything, but I did appreciate it, and I thought it was a good scene.
Yeah, I got really excited when the doors opened. Did you think that was Boba Fett that was reaching in to grab him?
I thought about it, actually.
Yeah,
I thought it was too, and I wouldn't have been surprised if they went that way, but I actually took note of the signet on the shoulders and what the armor looked like on those Mandalorians, and I went and Googled some pictures of Boba Fett, and he's totally different signet, and he's got yellow shoulder armor, and they didn't have that, so wasn't him.
Also, I mean, I guess we don't really know the ages of people, but Boba Fett would probably be a little kid at this point too.
Probably maybe. Something like that. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. I was just like, oh my god, maybe it's Boba Fett, but either way, it doesn't seem to be.
a couple of things that I feel like maybe were a little new for that is it seemed, even we still don't know for sure, but it seemed like his parents got killed by the droids. We haven't seen that before because they were right outside the opening and then you see in a big explosion.
Well, actually, come to think of it, we don't even know for sure that they're dead.
We don't,
We saw an explosion, or we heard an explosion.
That's right.
And a flash through the crack in the door, but wouldn't it be interesting if somewhere down the road the Mandalorian realizes that his parents are actually still alive?
They might do that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They do that a lot.
Yeah. I almost hope they don't, but if they do, then hopefully they do it well. But then the other thing is just a reinforcement that the Mandalorian, it's part of their creed to take on these foundlings. And it almost seemed a little silly to me that really in the middle of this battle, you're going to take one of your soldiers off the field to transport this child away. But I got to let go of that and just think, you know, it's all about their honor and how they conduct themselves.
Yeah, you so just
showing
have to think
that action.
Right, that it's that important to them that they're going to rescue someone like that from that situation, that they're going to sacrifice one of their fighters at them in the moment.
Okay, any more notes?
Not from me.
I'm good.
So, let's see. The the Imperials killed maybe all or at least many of the Mandalorians in the covert on Navarra. Anyway, I just thought, man, those Mandalorians tend to get eradicated.
Yeah, they gotta cut luck. That out.
Yeah. Gideon calls Greef Karga a disgraced magistrate. I didn't know what a magistrate was, but it's a civil officer or lay judge who administers the law. So I thought that was kind of cool. He stayed within his field, but just on the darker side, I guess, or the more lawless side.
The other side of the law.
Right. like and then, a traffic court judge, huh?
I guess so, yeah.
That's a disgrace.
Just being one. And I liked when Greef was like, "And now that the scum and villainy have been washed away, it's very respectable again." And Mando goes, "Is a bounty hunter hive? Some of my favorite people are bounty hunters."
Yeah. That was great.
It's charming. A couple of Department of Suspension of Disbelief. I thought that that was one strong sewer vent. It was, withstood her machine gun. I don't know.
Oh, right. Maybe. Like one piece fell off.
And then, you know, you were mentioning how giving them until nightfall, and I'm not even sure what he wanted. He said, you know, what are you offering? He said reasonable negotiation. Negotiating what? They have the prize that they want. And for that matter, why were the two scout troopers waiting for confirmation to come into town?
I watched it twice, though, and see what happened was that the stormtroopers showed up at the time Moff Gideon was, you know, given his psychological warfare speech. He didn't know that Mando and the others didn't have the baby, so that he thought he would give them time to think about handing him over.
But
wait a minute,
the troopers are in contact with.
Yeah, but they told him to wait. Moff Gideon's talking. He's killing his own troops.
So he didn't know they didn't have him.
Not yet, but then as soon as he walked back to his ship, you'd think, he probably would have found out, right?
Yeah, it's a good question, though, because it does seem like it doesn't quite...
Makes a little more sense.
...line up perfectly, but a little more.
And then, you know, maybe it's not too smart of IG-11 to go ahead and take Baby Yoda right into the heart of town where all the troops are.
Right.
Why not take him back to the ship, which we know has security protocols that nothing on this planet can get through? So,
and then that wipes away everything that happened before, so all is good.
Yeah.
The action can continue.
I've always found it, there's an incongruity between how in Star Wars, starting with the middle three, you know, the original Star Wars, the Jedi are not well known and they're considered a legend. But then when you watch the prequels 30 years earlier, they're like at the core of government and they're basically the galaxy's policemen.
Right.
And, you know, maybe the Empire clamped down and tried to like eradicate all knowledge of them. But the Mandalorians should know at least about what I mentioned before, Ter Vizsla, their Jedi leader from 1,000 years ago. Maybe that was just too long ago. I don't know. Just seems a little incongruous to me. Cool. All right, let's take a little break. There is more to come. Stay with us.
Before you cross the street, take my hand. Life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans.
All right, it's time for some news about The Mandalorian. I've got a couple of items here this week. The first one is an interview with Emily Swallow, who is the actress who played the armor in The Mandalorian. This comes from digitalspy.com. There's a couple of good quotes from this interview here. She says, regarding wearing the armor, she says, "I'm relieved to see that it looks a lot better than it felt. I hope at some point they release a bloopers reel, because when you get a couple of Mandalorians in a room together in that armor and in these helmets, it can get pretty ridiculous. You've got no peripheral vision and you can't see down, so you're kind of just wandering around in blind faith that you're not going to trip or run into somebody."
God.
I think that's sort of funny, but I can kind of see that with those helmets. There's very little vision coming out of those.
Not too practical.
Not too practical, yeah. And then she goes on to talk about when George Lucas came to visit the set. She says, one of the first days I was on set shooting the first episode, George Lucas actually came to visit. He was coming to surprise Jon Favreau for his birthday. And everyone who was around that day just hung out for a while and listened to him tell stories. It really did feel like we were part of this incredible lineage of these beautiful and fantastical stories that he created decades ago and that persist because of the heart of them. There are so many characters in the Star Wars universe that we fell in love with and that keep drawing us back in. So
that's cool.
It's cool, yeah. George doesn't, you know, really have much of a say in this stuff anymore, but he still came by and they just sat around chatting. It sounds like a really nice thing, actually. Yeah. I think
the creator has shown.
You know, yeah. I read that he had an outline for the plot of the final three movies, and when he found out they weren't going to use it, he was bummed out because he kind of thought there was. He thought they would when he sold Star Wars to Disney. And, you know, after the prequels, I was like, yeah, give it to somebody else. But now all said and done, I wish that they had had a partnership with him and somebody else where they could use his stuff, but make it come alive and make it more entertaining and fun.
Yeah.
After it's all said and done.
As much as I liked the final trilogy, I agree with that 100%. Like, he's the creator of this whole thing, so some sort of partnership might have been a really great idea, and yeah, probably appropriate, if you know it right, because he's the guy. He's the guy who created these characters, and he should have had some sort of input into what they did.
He wouldn't have killed Luke Skywalker in self-pity on a rock.
He would not have, no. Probably not, anyways.
He didn't die in self-pity. He died trying to help.
He was on the island in self-pity. Oh, I can't fight anymore. I'm a terrible person, blah, 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 blah.
Well, they should have consulted you, Rich. That would have been the most appropriate thing to do.
Hell yeah. He would have taken out half the stormtroopers before he went.
All right, another article here from Slate.com, and this is more of an opinion, but I thought was interesting, so maybe you guys can have a comment on it. But the title of the article is "The Mandalorian, Not the Rise of Skywalker, Is the Future of Star Wars." And this from the article, "Where the Rise of Skywalker was overstuffed and underexplained, The Mandalorian took its sweet time, and not just by stretching its story out over 8 episodes, or by releasing them once a week rather than a bingeable bundle. The very quality that turned some critics off of The Mandalorian's early episodes, its leisurely pace, has turned out to be the series' saving grace, letting fans marinate for a while in this universe of bounty hunters and space wizards rather than hurling them through it at light speed. TV is looking more and more like the place where the franchise will play out in the future. The Mandalorian, if The Mandalorian is any indicator, it will also create room for writers to play with a genre, to take big risks, and to slow things way down."
Yeah.
So once again, as much as I enjoyed The Rise of Skywalker, I agree with this too. I think TV gives them all kinds of room to mess around and play with, and The Mandalorian was a pretty good start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a 6-hour movie versus a 2-hour movie.
Yeah, and it showed us new things and new corners of the universe, and I think we're just going to get even more of that in season 2, so I'm excited for that.
Cool.
All right, and Jason, I think you have more on this topic, but I'll start us off here. We all know that Mando season 2 is in production. It's coming. It's coming sometime in 2020, but we finally got a actual official announcement, because the other day Jon Favreau tweeted that season 2 of The Mandalorian coming fall 2020. So we're going to get it sort of, you know, the same time next year that season 1 started. And
I was thinking it might be not come out for a couple of years, so I was glad to hear that.
Yeah, yeah. Me too. I think it's great too. I mean, in some ways it kind of still feels like a long way away, but
yeah,
you know, as I get older, time speed seems to speed up, so we'll be there before we know it. Included in the tweet was a picture of a shirtless Gamorrean, and if you don't remember what those are, we saw them mostly, I think, in Jabba's palace in the original trilogy, and they're sort of those pig-like creatures. But the one in the tweet looked way more buff than the ones in Jabba's palace. They seemed to be like chubby, roly-poly, fatso guys, but this guy had a little more muscle to him. So it looks like we're going to get Gamorreans maybe in season
Sweet.
Two.
That was probably what he was filming that day or something.
Yeah, probably, but it was kind of cool. So yeah. Mandalorian season two, fall 2020, and that's all I know about it for now.
Same time, same channel.
That's right.
So Steve Barr, one of the listeners, Steve Barr, says this episode podcast might be a good opportunity to discuss what and when anything else of interest to you is coming to Disney Plus. I looked and couldn't find anything, so we'll probably be canceling my subscription after rewatching this season. And then Michael Darwin said, before anyone cancels their Disney Plus, I highly recommend checking out the Clone Wars and Rebels cartoons if you haven't already done so. Some of the best Star Wars stories are contained in those two series. If you don't know, Clone Wars is an animated series, takes place between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. It stars Anakin and Ben Kenobi and this big sprawling cast, and just really delves into the mythos of Star Wars. A lot of the stuff that they're using in this series comes from those, and it ran from 2008 to 2014, and then I think it was abruptly canceled when Disney bought Star Wars, but Disney Plus is doing a seventh season to finish it up, which is great. I'm sure fans of that series are happy that it's going to be finished. It's going to show the Siege of Mandalore, like I mentioned earlier, and all that. But, you know, if you're not into that, I was looking at other upcoming Disney Plus shows, and there's a bunch of really interesting stuff coming up, but it's really not coming up for a while. There's a bunch of Marvel shows that have, you know, characters from the movies played by those actors. Falcon and Winter Soldier with Anthony Mackie and Stan Sebastian is August of next year. WandaVision with Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany, Wanda and the Vision, early 2021. This is actually one of the ones I'm looking forward to the most because they're doing this really weird take on it where they're in this like Beaver Cleaver like household, and I think it's based on a comic of the same with that had the Vision, and it was almost like a Twilight Zone-y horror kind of a thing. I don't know if they'll do that on Disney Plus, but anyway, there's a Loki show with Tom Hiddleston coming in early 2021. There's a What If cartoon with Jeffrey Wright from Westworld as the Watcher, Watu. And What If is just crazy stories in the Marvel Universe. What if, you know, Spider-Man, what if Uncle Ben never died? Or, you know, just you can explore different story points. And the actors will be, a lot of them will be doing the voices. Tom Hiddleston, Michael Rooker, Chris Hemsworth, Chadwick Boseman. I'm excited about that one. That's mid 2021.
Yeah, sounds cool.
Hawkeye with Jeremy Renner, late 2021.
Don't really care. What if Hawkeye was a badass?
There's also Moon Knight, Miss Marvel, and She-Hulk, which are cool because none of those characters have been in the movies yet. But She-Hulk. Yeah.
Ooh.
She-Hulk's great. She's a lawyer. She's intelligent when she's hulked out, so she pretty much stays hulked out all the time, and it's different, but it's cool.
Right, and she's on the swimsuit issue too.
There's the Obi-Wan Kenobi series with Ewan McGregor that we've mentioned before. That starts filming next July. They don't have a premiere, but I'm guessing 2021. And then there's the Rogue One prequel series with Diego Luna reprising his role as Cassian Andor and Alan Tudyk as K2SO, which I think is super cool.
That's cool.
That won't be till 2021 either. So, yeah, unless you like Clone Wars, not much for a while. I might actually cancel myself for a little while. There's a bunch of nonfiction series like Be Our Chef, this cooking reality competition, Marvel 616 docuseries, but eh. I mean, it's going to be a while until some of these really big, interesting ones hit.
It's weird. It seems like they have, like, nothing until next year at the earliest, and then all this stuff is going to hit all at the same time, like back to back to
2021.
Yeah,
that's they're pretty short. They're like 6 episodes, 10 episodes.
Okay. I mean, obviously, as they move into the future, they'll be able to stagger things out a bit. So if any of these shows go for second or third seasons, like, they can plan that. But it just feels like now we're going to have a year of nothing and then yeah. like 50 shows all at once.
I know.
So come August, let's all buy some stock in Disney.
Yeah.
But I also want to mention, you might want to cancel Disney and get CBS All Access, because Star Trek Picard starts next month, January.
Right.
If you're into that, Richard and I have been talking about podcasting about that show on this podcast, but we haven't really decided yet, but stay tuned for more information. If we don't podcast on it, I'm still going to watch it. So I'll talk about it a little bit somewhere.
Definitely.
Patrick Stewart reprising his role. That's 10 episode series.
Cool.
And then last, we got a message from someone who worked on The Mandalorian for season one and part of season two. And they said they didn't want me to say who they are, but they said they could be our Bothan spy with some behind the scenes info.
Cool.
So talked about how often Pedro Pascal was in the suit. So if you don't want to hear how much Pedro Pascal was in the suit, you should skip ahead and not listen to this part. I'll give you a second. Okay, this person says Pedro Pascal was never in the suit for season one.
What? That is nuts.
Now, I don't know.
I believe it, though.
Yeah.
I believe it.
I believe it, but we can't know for sure. But anyway, they said if we see him reveal himself this season, it's because they went back and shot inserts of just him. So I got this message before this final episode aired. He wasn't even cast until after season one wrapped.
Oh my gosh.
Disney is a money-making machine.
So they basically cast him for his voice work then.
I mean,
yeah, he's just voicer.
But they go on. Brendan Wayne is the Mandalorian for all scenes when Mando is just walking around being Mando and light action. There's a second stuntman that does the hard action named Latif Crowder. Both of these performers are fantastic and professional. I don't think Brendan was ever going to be the Mando unmasked. However, the suit was made specifically for him. He certainly could have been Mando. I would have preferred it. Pedro is definitely in the suit at times in season two, but I hear he's quite difficult at the least.
Oh,
a little juicy gossip there.
That is definitely some juicy gossip.
So if you like the way Mando moves, sorry, it's not Pedro.
Hopefully Pedro Pascal can duplicate that. Also, as to locations, the entire show is shot in Manhattan Beach at Raleigh Studios. They have this one particular stage that's called The Volume. It's a 360-degree room whose walls are lined with LEDs. They can program in any location and have it tracked on the walls and ceiling. The camera sees what is projected through the LEDs. It's amazing. All the exteriors are done at the studio as well. You reported about that before, right, Chris?
I don't know if I did, actually. I don't remember talking about where it was filmed. Certainly not.
But this whole setup where they can make it seem like they're on location even when they're not, that's incredible.
That is very
cool.
Sounds
like a holodeck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neat. So that's all we got. If you guys have any other questions, I can ask this person and see if we can get more information if you want. So let me know.
Cool. It's fun to have a spy.
Okay, let's move on to listener feedback.
Okay. Emily Rochette, I love it. I'm glad I had the wrong feeling and that Baby Yoda is in good hands. I'm thinking it's going to be hard for Mando to find Baby Yoda's parents and or people, as we practically never see Yoda species in the Star Wars universe or Star Wars movies. Mando will probably just have to learn how to be his father. And let's hope season two episodes are longer. Thanks for the podcast. You guys rock.
Yeah, Mando's going to have to just be his father for the next 200 years while he becomes mature, or however long it takes. Christopher Parent writes, great episode. Loved how it seemed to channel feelings of the movies The Wild Bunch and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Couldn't help but laugh out loud with come on, baby, do the magic hands thing. Looking forward to season two.
Mike Sullivan says, that episode was amazing. So much to unpack. IG-11 was the hero of this episode. I am going to miss him. I love that Din got both his signet and the jetpack. Seeing the armor kick ass was amazing too, and Moff Gideon has the Mandalorian dark saber. Holy ending. The two scout troopers at the beginning was the funniest part of the episode. Couldn't have sounded like two army privates any better.
Mark McBurney. Fantastic episode from start to finish. Makes me miss the days when a season would be 20 episodes plus. Seeing a live-action darksaber was awesome and is perfect for this show as it was created by the first Mandalorian Jedi. And can't wait to hear more about Death Watch, Mandalorians that saved him, and of course, Mandalore the Great.
Very cool. Matt Mann writes, Jason Sudeikis goes right to the top of celebrity cameos for all of Star Wars, right? How do you top child-abusing speeder bike stormtrooper?
I don't know. His stock may have gone down.
Yeah, maybe.
Alicia Stout says, my only gripe was after they killed Gideon, they were like, well, that's all the stormtroopers. Let's just camp here. Say what now? Seems like there were a lot more troopers than that. Other than that, it was a great episode. Oh, and if I see another person hit my baby, yo, I will punch them through my TV. I have spoken.
Good policy.
Yep. I mean, I think IG-11 and Mando, and they were just shooting them down left and right. So I think that was the idea that during that big shootout, they just took care of them.
Oh, yeah. They that's what he said, too. They basically cleaned out all the stormtroopers
they
and
had
stuff from the planet.
Those two, like, machine gun, big giant guns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Moff Gideon brought a lot of them with him, didn't he? I think that was implied in the last episode. So they sort of cleaned out what were there, and the ones that he brought are now dead. So they're good for now.
He killed a few.
Yeah, he killed a few too. That's right.
Michael Darwin. The biker scout scene was literally the best Star Wars thing in 20 years. I don't know where Star Wars is going in the long run, but I think a big reason for The Mandalorian's success is that it has more or less been allowed to stand on its own with no direct connection to the larger mythology yet. The original trilogy was revolutionary for its time, but storytelling has evolved beyond just telling stories in three parts. We have a whole universe to explore. Let's go play in it.
Absolutely. And Cindy Barrick writes, thank you for helping me appreciate this series. Listening to your podcast helped me to really enjoy the latter half of the episodes. The Adora baby helped too.
Thanks, Cindy. All right, we have a couple of calls. One first-time caller, Belinda.
Hi there. My name is Belinda, and I am just reflecting on a couple of impressions from the season one finale of The Mandalorian. And the title of the episode was Redemption, which was a really good name for this particular episode because there were some very important episodes or instances of redemption that I saw that were worth noting. The first one is that the droid IG-11 is redeemed in the eyes of the Mandalorian character in that his reprogramming to nurse and protect overruled his quote-unquote nature to be a hunter, which, you know, causing the question whether droids have natures at all. But I thought that was a pretty interesting thing to watch. And also the Mandalorian himself, when he receives his sigil and his jetpack, he has a sense of redemption because his purpose is renewed or redeemed with this new directive to bring baby Yoda back to the Jedi. Which seems counterintuitive to him, but he's still going to do it because of the creed that he follows, which is pretty interesting and self-deferential. Also, at the beginning, when the two scout troopers were hitting and punching Baby Yoda, I knew that this was going to blow up on Twitter because people are so emotionally attached to Baby Yoda. So I went and searched the Mandalorian hashtag and to see what the public outcry would be, and I was not disappointed. People do not want to see Baby Yoda messed with, which was pretty fascinating. And lastly, the Darksaber at the end of the episode that Moff uses to escape from his crashed ship. I'm curious about the backstory of the Darksaber because I don't really follow a lot of the Star Wars universe. So now I'm going to have to watch Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels while I wait for season 2 of The Mandalorian just so that I can find out more about the Darksaber. So I'm actually glad that I have something else to watch before season 2. And the finale sets the show up for a fantastic second season. I'm excited to see what they come up with. The show has a really great way of using themes that are well-known without being derivative, so it's really refreshing and fun to watch. I enjoy your podcast, and have a great day. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. That was great. Good call.
Yeah, great stuff. I kind of feel the same way.
I know.
To go back and watch all the Clone Wars stuff now too, even though it's a little daunting, but I might.
I am.
Some of Clone Wars was awesome.
Cool. Okay, and then we have, to cap it off, Steve Brown.
Hey guys, it's Steve, and I just started watching my second viewing of The Mandalorian Chapter 8, Redemption. I really, really laughed at that opening scene both times, and just so great, the callback to them not being able to hit the whatever that thing was in the desert, and talking about the child. It just made me laugh, that whole conversation. And like, it's been a few minutes. No, it's been more than a few minutes. I'm like, it's been like 30 seconds, if that. So I was just, and they keep calling back and say, well, he just killed somebody for interrupting him. So hilarious. I love it. A lot of good stuff in this episode as I'm rewatching it, and I can't wait to hear what you guys thought. I loved seeing the armor and badass fighting those stormtroopers in the tunnels there. Did they explain? I know I'm going to watch it a second time, so I'll probably hear it. But I know she said something about when they found all that equipment and stuff and realized that all those Mandalorians were killed. Did she say who it was, or she just says, once we came out of hiding, we knew this could be a consequence? Or was it just more Imperials that came in? And if so, how did she survive? I'm not sure about that, but I love the setup for season 2. I love that some of the stuff that you guys talked about, predictions that you made, came true. As much as I hated the fact that Quill was dead, I was glad that we got to see IG-11 and see his protection and all that, and get a little bit more of the backstory and get the helmet off, but a living thing didn't see him in the helmet. So anyway, I'm gonna watch it again here in a second, but can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Steve.
Didn't the armor mention that, well, obviously a lot of the Mandalorians were killed there, but some of them may have fled off the planet too, so there could be some of them out there still floating around a bit.
I think she also said it was the imps, the Imperial stormtroopers that came down and and fought them.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know. It's like, really? Would they take out that many Mandalorians when just four of them took out the entire, bounty all of hunter. Them at the end?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she said as soon as they came out in the open, the Imperials came and took them out.
I guess when nobody's watching, the stormtroopers get a lot better at shooting or something. I don't know.
A few people also wrote in asking me, come on, why don't you go on, cover Rise of Skywalker? We want to know your thoughts. And
why don't you?
I kind of said it already, but after podcasting on Fear the Walking Dead, a show that I was not enjoying for a season, and I realized that, mostly podcasting for me is about podcasting about something I'm a fan of, and there's some nitpicking, but that's not the point, it's done with love, and I'm just not a fan of this movie. And I don't want to devote the time to go watch it again, take the notes, organize my thought, and then just go on a podcast and lay out all the reasons why I didn't like it, and then just bum people out. Like, that's what I did with Force Awakens, and it was just a negative experience all the way around for everyone involved in it. And it was hard work. Well, not that hard, but it takes time. And so, I mean, I'll just say briefly, if people kind of want to get the idea, that I just don't jibe with J.J. Abrams. I've come to terms with that. And I think he writes for cool moments, but he doesn't have the underlying connective tissue. So it feels as why this is happening or why it makes sense. It's just like, no, it'd be really cool to have Harrison Ford on screen. And look, there's a knife that shows where the Sith Wayfinder is if you hold it up just like this. And there's these cool MacGuffins. Aren't they cool? And I'm just like, no, it feels really hollow and manipulative to me. And it just feels like the whole thing is being manhandled by somebody who doesn't really understand the substance of it. That's one reason why I was saying I wish George Lucas could have been involved with the trilogy, because after this movie, the whole thing just feels like, I don't even, in some ways it's worse than the prequels, because it feels like inauthentic. And I don't know. For a lot of people, it doesn't matter if a movie makes sense plot-wise or on a character level or on a human level, but all that stuff does matter to me. And when I feel like that stuff isn't being taken into account, then I'm not entertained. I'm just kind of pissed off. So that's why I don't want to spend a whole hour enumerating all the different things about it that I thought were stupid and pissed me off. That said, I did laugh a few times, and I like the energy that J.J. Abrams brought to it, especially after the prequels, which felt kind of flat. And the chemistry of the characters is really good for the most part, and some of them are totally incredible. Like, I think this movie actually had some of the best visuals in the whole 9 movie epic. So there's that. But overall, it feels like a 16-year-old is writing the plot to me.
Yeah. Well, it was made for 8th graders. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, man, I can see what you're saying. Like, I didn't enjoy, well, I didn't really enjoy Fear season, the last season of Fear either. And podcasting about it felt like work at times. So I get it. I can understand you not wanting to come on and just, you know, tear the movie apart.
Yeah.
When, you know, there's
no fun.
Yeah. When there's, you know, there's lots of people out there that I think feel the same way as you, but there's plenty that, are sort of on the other side of the argument. But you know, I think if this was a movie review podcast, you'd probably have a little more of a responsibility to come in and do that, but it's not. It's more of a celebration of stuff that we love and, or at least hope to love. Right. So,
yeah,
so I get it. I understand. I think it's going to be a bit of a bummer to do it without you, but at the same time, you know, that's okay.
Thank you.
What if you came on and you moderated and we tried to convince you it was a good movie?
I really don't think it's going to work. I mean, I just thought it was awful.
Man.
And I watched it twice, too, just to give it a really good chance. You know?
I still have to, go back and see it a second time. So I'm going to do that this week before we record anything else about it.
Okay, Rich, what's coming on next week?
Ha! Nothing.
I'll get back to you in 9 months or whatever.
All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for coming along with us for the season.
Yeah, it was great, guys. This was as much fun, almost as much fun as Ash versus Evil Dead.
Yeah, right. Pretty close.
Nice.
Pretty close.
Nice save.
Yeah.
If you guys want to write in, wait, should we say all this part? Let me just say, next week, as you may have guessed by the conversation we just had, we are covering Rise of Skywalker. It just won't be me, but it will be Chris and Richard and Eric, aka Mr. Blog. So that should be a lot of fun. Without me there, it'd be more fun. So if you want to write in or record a message for that, you can email us at groovy@podcastica.com.
Cool. And check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
And we're also on Twitter and Instagram @HousePodcastica.
And you can find Chris's Talking Dead podcast at talkingdeadpodcast.com. And you can find me at podcastica.com. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Come on, baby, do the magic hand thing.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.